be guided by time. Today is Sunday, March 4th already, 2018. And here we are in Yerushalayim, beautiful weather. And we know that in the eastern coast, you needed the Hatzlacha to survive Shabbat. It was terrible. People died from the storm, the winds. Now, a number of comments on previous lectures. We've spent many, many years on recording from Rabban Asher Klein. Shimon Wanderer, who was here last week from Manchester visiting Israel, went online, and he was maskin ishkachat when the Mishnah Halacha died. I remember there was a big asik, and here's all the information. He was buried in the ancient cemetery in Tzfat. So there were two problems involved. One, the minig is, I don't know where this minig comes from, because it's not alpi halacha, it's the opposite. But if you die in Yerushalayim, you should be buried in Yerushalayim. Two, the ancient cemetery in Tzfat, there's a chayrim from many years ago, you can no longer bury there, it's too crowded. And he left the Tzavah, he wanted to be buried near his great-great-great-grandfather, who was a Talmud Mufak of the Chatam Sofer. So the Beit Din met, anyway, Halacha Lemaisu is buried in Tzfat, and here is all the information from the internet, and the picture here, see the trouble with these pictures, they don't identify, but that's the Biyana Rebbe. You see, that's the Biyana Rebbe at the funeral. You can look at it later. The Biyana, there he is. That's the Biyana Rebbe. I knew him when he ate in my house when he was a kid. So I have a deep connection with the Biyana. Mark Wiener, Rabbi Doctor, Lieutenant Colonel Mark, sent me, it was very fascinating, about Lou Gehrig, that they found with his body, he played, you know, set the original consecutive 2-1-3-0 straight games, which was the original record for straight games, and they x-rayed, and at the later when he was ill, they found he broke bones innumerable times, but he had a level of pain that it didn't bother him, and he can go on playing. So Mark says, correctly so, he's coming on what I said in class when I, very quickly, in Rechav Aron and Chelik Gimel, I go into great detail in my shurim, what is the Simen Muvhak? So I gave the example, I think I mentioned in class, this hand I broke in four different places. So if they would x-ray, they would see that there were breaks. All right, it's many years ago. But that would be a Simen Muvhak. You follow? Stam, if you have six fingers, would be a Simen Muvhak. There's no question that our friend Lou Gehrig, that would be a Simen Muvhak. Okay, now I want to pick up where I left off, and I want to thank my Talmud Arya Wishnitzer, whose mother I met this past a few weeks ago in the Hollywood area. He did some research on, you see, we were speaking about a case that, not last week, but the week before, there was a case where we don't have all the details. Rav Ovadia is just reacting to what the rabbi in Panama City wrote to him about. We don't have all the details, but a rav in Germany claims that the rabbi who handled the get and did the second marriage for the woman was not reliable, a Rabbi Witkin. His name is Rabbi Nun Witkin in the Tshuva. It's Rabbi Nathan Witkin. And we get his obituary, New York Times, October 11th, 1990. He died at the age of 88. Rabbi Nathan Witkin, who served for 3 decades as a chaplain ministering to United States Armed Service personnel and their families in the Canal Zone, died Tuesday at Sarasota Memorial Hospital in Florida. He was 88 years old and lived in retirement in Sarasota since 1978. Now, his family said he died after a stroke. Rabbi Witkin went to the Canal Zone in 1937 as a field representative of the National Jewish Welfare Board. The National Jewish Welfare Board, you should know, ran the chaplaincy until today. It runs the chaplaincy for the rabbis in the United States. He built the first center there for Jewish military personnel. It soon became a meeting place for Americans of all faiths. His first wife, the former Esther Finkelstein, was killed in 1942 when a fighter plane crashed into the center. He later married Helen Schuchat, then a teacher in the Canal Zone. Now, who was he? He was born in Manhattan, studied in Jerusalem, ordained by Chief Rabbi Cook in 1933. Before his assignment to Panama in 1937, he was a chaplain of the Civilian Conservation Corps for 2 years. And the article goes on and on. There's an anecdotal article about him. He was held in great esteem and awe. He was a focal figure of the Jewish community. The Goyim had great derech eretz for him, served in the American military chaplaincy for so many years and did so much good. All right, what I gain out of the article is here you probably have a clash of Haredi thinking versus a much more open person. And this question of can we rely upon him, can't we rely upon him, a first marriage, a get, then he's accused of Geirut. In the Tshuva it says that he did in the army wholesale Geirut. All right, this is a very delicate question. We suffer with this question today. In Israel, we have on to, it could be 350,000, 400,000 Russians who are Gentiles. How do we convert them? Many of them are not interested in becoming Shomer Torah and Mitzvot. They've gone through a civilian conversion. Listen to what I'm saying. This is a new concept. It's not halakha. Civilian. They're Jews like everyone else. They're Israelis like everyone else living here. They serve in the army. They speak Hebrew. Their kids serve in the army. Their kids speak Hebrew. Their kids go to mamlachti schools. And you want them to convert. We want them to be Jews. We want to know that their children are Jewish. What do we do with Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha? And this is a delicate problem that we're right now, for instance, in the army, they're on a tremendous conversion program that has very good success. But the army is a controlled environment. It's very different than when you're on the streets in North Tel Aviv, if you follow me well, if you're on the streets of Haifa. So these accusations against Rabbi Witkin that the rabbi in Germany makes could very well be accurate. Would it invalidate him altogether? Certainly not. The man probably can be depended upon. He knows a get is needed. He knows that you can't mean the Sadeh Kedushin. He's a Talmud of Rav Kook. No one ever said. Then they accuse him with Shabbos. Remember the Tshuva. Nothing is clear. But I can't believe he did anything in Shabbos. It could be that in Panama City, the center, people drove up in Shabbos. No, this is something that goes on today all over the world with Orthodox shuls. I saw in Stamford, Connecticut with my own eyes. Remember I told you, this kid was bar mitzvah, beautiful, leyend, davened, everything beautiful. And Rebbeinu Shel Olam, then I see his family driving away on Shabbos. I hope he'll become a total Baal Tshuva, becomes a chashuv family. But this is a sad reality. Chabad. I told you the story in Florida with Morris Engelberg, right? Joe DiMaggio died in his arms, and Morris Engelberg was telling me, boasting, what he's done and how he's come back and the shul he built. And once a month they have a Friday night dinner. But he said, Morris said, you know, Kaliachiyad, that the doctor, the medical doctor, the heart expert, who was Joe DiMaggio's cardiologist, the man who made the initial connection between Rakefet and his Talmud Goldis and Morris Engelberg, that the doctor can't come to the Friday night dinners because he doesn't drive on Shabbos. Nu miklal hein atasha meyalav, miklal lav atasha meyahein. What does it mean? It means that Morris drives there. He lives in this part of Florida. The shul he built is in Hollywood. It's a 10-minute drive, I would say. I went there. I know the difference. I know the distance. And it's Chabad. So you see, can you parcel him? And this is a delicate question that we don't have black and white guidance. We're struggling with it today. Halacha l'maisa, my opinion is you have to do the best with the Russians. You have to demand the best. But b'dieved, if you don't have total victory, the gerut is still tofeset. As long as they don't go back to worshipping idols, they are Jews. And I can prove it halachically 1,000%. If you recall my shiurim on this 20, 30 years ago, Reb Moshe Feinstein with Hamitkayer Ben Ha'akum, no one has ever been able to refute Reb Moshe. And Reb Moshe shows that if you can convert and you don't know what Shabbos is, the only thing the Gemara is concerned with is how many kabanot chatot you have to bring. It's the Gemara in Shabbos, klal gadol, samach gimel, that's it, you're there. And what do you mean the Gemara? The guy didn't know there's a Shabbos. So you see, so Taisa, how can he be, didn't know there's a Shabbos? He lived among Goyim. The book they gave him to study Judaism was missing the pages on Shabbos. But you see from there that if you convert l'shem shemayim to what you think Judaism is, the conversion is chal. Now, with the people today, the story I told you, when did I tell it in class? Last week, was it this class or the Monday class? Maybe it was the Monday class. The story I told you is fabulous. Where Rav Aryeh Leib Grisnis comes home Shabbos, the Aruch Beit Din of London. He's living in my house, Berlin 18. And I remember, I see it vividly in front of me, Rav Aryeh Leib, Rabbanisha clothes, and he's now a Litvisha Gadol who became an English gentleman, and in his anglicized Hebrew, he says to these kids playing in front of the house with chalk, Shabbat Hayom, Asul Ishtamesh Begir, and these kids look him in the eye and say, Lanu Mutah, Anachnu Chiloniyim, Anachnu Lo Datiyim. You follow? So the person's mindset, who do they know as Jews? Bibi Netanyahu. No, Bibi Netanyahu. I want to ask you a bit. You celebrated Purim. Did Bibi celebrate Purim? The one day he has that they're going to question him and ask him all these questions is Dafkar on Purim. You follow me? He didn't have any shusha. He had Navaz at the Gahad. Garnish.
He was at Megillah Thursday night.
He was at Megillah?
Thursday night.
Where?
By Don Adams' house, one of the, ambassadors to the UN.
You mean he was there at Friedman's house?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. At least that night he celebrated. But all right, I don't want to say a bad word because Chabad would not be happy with me. I don't know if he puts on tefillin every morning. You know, yeah. But if this is what they think Judaism is, conversion is chal. So it's a very difficult topic. I can tell you that I participated in a North Tel Aviv. I have a Talmud, Constantine, Rabbi Ariel Constantine. So he came in Aliyah about 10, 11 years ago. So I read in the newspapers, he took a shul where there were 10 people, 12 people Friday night. Now there are 300 people. So I caught up with Ariel again, and I had been with him when he was a rabbi in America, and I went to visit him. So I came to Tel Aviv on a Wednesday, I believe. So he said to me, Rebbe, Thursday night I'm teaching a conversion class for Tzoha. And my father's going to speak. His father came in from America for the grandson's bar mitzvah. And he said to me, come, it'll be an experience. So Malk and I went. We were very impressed. Number one, everyone attending the class, let's say a woman wanted to convert, if she had a Jewish boyfriend, the Jewish boyfriend had to come with her. If it was a man wanted to convert, had a Jewish girlfriend, she had to come. You follow? The conversion class was for both. Number one. Number two, I saw how attentive they were when his father spoke. His father was a survivor, told the story with miracles, how they survived, how they got out, how they survived the Nazis. His father died, but his mother stayed with him, and they had siyata d'shmaya, it's beyond words. And he told it, I saw they were listening, could hear a pin drop. And then what they do in the army too, and Labriot Soha does, and they have advertisements, they ask for families, will you adopt these would-be converts? Let them come for Shabbos, let them come from Yontov, let them see the rhythm of a Jewish life. Nope. We're only humans. Lo nitnav Torah l'malachei hasharet. We're only humans. We don't have 100% success, but you have a good percentage. And this criticism of Rabbi Witkin, this is the whole machloket today. I can tell you one little story. There was the chief rabbi of the Israeli army, was Rabbi Weiss. He was 8, 9, 10 years ago, he was chief rabbi during Gush Katif. He suffered because there was a lot of pressure on him to resign. I mean, it's a terrible thing, Gush Katif. It's on the news today. If you follow the Israeli news, they're pressing, they want to press charges against Rabbi Drukman of, where's he, Rabbi? He's Rabbi, one of the cities up north. And one of the things the city has, he's the Rebbe of the city. So they dedicated us. You heard the news this morning? Read through the headlines. So they dedicated a square or a street in memory of Arik Sharon. And he said in public they should put a black flag up on that street. And Aaron Rakepet happens to agree with Rabbi Drukman. He's a Chabadnik. It's not Chaimke's family. He's a Chabadnik. And he's a well-known Chabadnik, a Talmud Chacham, and all that goes with it. And what does he say? Arik Sharon, this man was a traitor to the Jewish people. Here was a man, right wing, a wonderful leader, and then he gives back Gush Katif.
He had his two sons out of the army.
All right, well, you know, with the family. And
somebody said that he was a Chabadnik.
No, that's someone else. That's not Arik Sharon. He was born in Brisk, but he was raised totally without religion, coming from Brisk, unlike Begin. Shimon Peres, the Zelda Zelda. Shimon Peres, but anyway, be it as it may, Gush Katif was in the news again. And this is the reality of life in Israel, and the struggle goes on and on, and we have to do what we can. But Rabbi Weiss was rugged, and he was an Elef, a guy.
So what do they have against him?
Nothing against Rabbi. Oh, the Gush Emunim element, the religious Zionist element, said you should resign in protest, call for Siruf Pekuda. No, he's talking 10 years ago with Gush Katif when it was going on. He suffered. Then he wrote a memoir. So in the memoir, he writes about the conversions, and he tells the following little story. The army program, I think it's called Nativ. That's the name for the program for Gevut. So he was describing this girl from the Ukraine who came in Aliyah at the age of 17, all alone. Her father was Jewish, her mother was not. And she was in the army, and she went through the program, total Shomeret Shabbat, all that goes with it. And when she spoke to the Dayanim, she quoted from Sefer Ruth, Amecha mi Elokayach Elokai. She said, the greatest thing in my life is to be a religious Jew. And he excused himself, he had to walk out, and he cried in the hallway. So, you have success. It's a delicate area. Okay, let's go further. The question we're dealing with, Rabbi Avraham Shapiro, and this question already, we have all the details. Rabbi Avraham Shapiro, it's from, let me go back to the tshuva. Rabbi Witkin, Shimon Tet, Shin Samach, okay. And this individual, they were Olim from Romania. And the woman had remarried, she was separated from her first husband. She claimed that her first husband, the marriage was Kedat v'Kedin. She says she got a get in between. The children from her second marriage are therefore legitimate. But the problem was, it was not clear. Did she get a get? Didn't she get a get? She contradicted herself. At times she said she got a get. The Rav was misunderstood the get. At times she said the get came in the mail. Excuse me. I know, I'm just repeating. I'm going to go further on the same tshuva. And Rabbi Avraham Shapiro sitting as the Av Beitin of the Beitin HaGadol Le'ir Urim is hearing the case, and what do you do? So, La Halacha, he paskin, look, they're Rabbanim in Romania, And this was, I explained to you last week, of all the communist countries, Romania was the best one as far as Yiddishkeit went. And she says she got a get, she's confused, but we have to take for granted that the Rebbe in Romania knew what he was doing when he was Masada Kedushin the second time. Le Rav Chida Milta, he had said at the end of the tshuva, that's where we ended off last week, that you should do a Bitul Haget, and I went into great detail. If you do a Bitul Haget, bifnei one or two, not in front of a beitin, then she will not know, it's al yedei shlichut, she'll get the get, she'll think it's good, you're out to mess her up, she should remarry without a get, shouldn't be mamzerim, the rabbanim teach you a lesson, afkina rabbanu l'kedushin minei. Okay, but this is a tremendous psak to save children. You're putting together two snifim that we have to be samach on the rabbanim in Romania, and the masham who said la halacha velo lamaseh. So Rav Avram Shapiro turned to Rav Ovadia Yosef. Do you agree with my psak? And here is the tshuva, and this is all new Yitzchak now. Evan Esser, Simon Zion, and he's dealing with the case. The name of the woman actually is mentioned here, and give you the exact file and the beit din. And he says, I've looked into what Rav Avram Shapiro did, and to be machshir the children of this woman, and they should be allowed lavo bekal kedat Moshe v'Yisrael. And he says, he gives reasons for it, and I absolutely, totally agree. Now, here we get involved, believe it or not, the question that haunts us is right in the news, right in everything going on today. And let me begin at the beginning. Tell me, have you studied rabbinic literature? Have you mastered Shas and Paiskim? So many times we see difference of opinion between Rabbanim Gedolei Yisrael. You open up Shas, the first Mishnah ready, you have three different opinions to when can you read Shema at night and be Yotzei. All right. Difference of opinion is part and parcel of the rabbinic tradition. Halachically, we always try to reach a conclusion because we don't want the world to have two Torahs. We want the world to live with one Torah. But tell me, did you ever see Rabbanim maledict other rabbis? There's no such concept. A Rav is a Rav. We're samach on the Rav. If we're going to start to ask questions, we can have a machlokes lahalacha. But we're going to go and say this rabbi, his gittin, his kedushin, are no good? This question haunts us today. The chief rabbi of Israel, and here you're reading the newspapers daily, the issue comes up. The chief rabbi of Israel was established in 1921. Does anyone know why it was established? The English conquered Palestine. They drove the Turks out. The English government, in relation to personal status, continued the policies of the Ottoman Empire. And the English government gave forth directives that the church, synagogue, the Muslim spiritual leaders, the mosques, are responsible for divorce and marriage. In every secular country in the world, in every Western country, divorce and marriage is totally in the hands of the civil government. You cannot get married in New York. I'm going to be Masada Kedushin next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem. You cannot get married unless you take out a license with the local municipality. You want to have a chuppah v'kedushin, that's your business. But a license you need from the municipality. In France, all of you know, you must have a civil ceremony. It's not like New York, and not like New Jersey, not like America. In America, you can have a religious ceremony. The religious ceremony counts as a civil ceremony as well. Anyone who is Masada Kedushin knows that you have to fill out the secular papers. In France, you must have a civil ceremony before the religious marriage. This is why in France, You can have a civil ceremony on Thursday, and the French come to the King David Hotel. I saw this with my own eyes. I saw the Baba Sali Masada Kedushin on Sunday. The only difference being that the civil ceremony in France cost 2 francs to get the license, and I couldn't believe my eyes. The father of the bride gave the Baba Sali a check for 50,000 francs, which the Baba Sali didn't even look at. He gave it to his rabbi. You follow? That's the difference between the civil marriage, Jacob, and the religious marriage a few days later. But when all this is said and done, when it came to Palestine, the English understood this is a religious country. Everyone here basically is religious. They didn't want to upset the apple cart, so they left the law as was. Rabbis for Jews, imams for Mohammedans, priests for Christians, Protestants, Catholics, etc. Now, can you depend upon the rabbi? Chief Rabbinate is established. It was established by Rabbi Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook. It was established by the Zionist element of the rabbinate. The Haredim absolutely outlawed, forbade the chief rabbinate. It has no authority for us. They established a rival rabbinate headed up by Reb Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld, the Eder Haredit, which goes on until today. Over the years, and it's now on to practically 100 years, it's very shortly going to be 100 years since the chief rabbinate was decided, was set up, was authorized. Over the years, the Haredim have moved into the mainstream. Yes, there still is an element of Shmuel Orbach, his element, the Eder Haredit, the Satma, but they are an absolute minority of the Haredi world today. The Haredi world, I don't have to go further, a lady who was raised in one of the most Haredi Litvisha homes, where her father was a right hand to Rav Shach Panovich, and Rav Shach was very different than Rav Kahana Min Hashkafa. And this lady was just appointed a judge in the secular courts of Israel in the Batei Mishpat. All right, so you look at the army today, you have Haredim who are officers, you have entire units, you have Glatt Kosher meat. As a matter of fact, you should know that the army only buys Glatt Kosher meat. It turned out they can get a better price when they order 500 tons of meat together than dividing it up half glatt, half non-glatt. Better price, 500 tons for an sample of meat, all glatt. Everything coming into the army is glatt, because the Haredim want only glatt, and then all right, the rest of the army can eat glatt too. There's nothing wrong with it. So the Haredim have moved into the mainstream. They're part of the Knesset. They're part of the government. But they want power. They want jobs. And little by little, they have taken over, believe it or not, the chief rabbinate as well. And you know today that there are two chief rabbis. Rabbi Yosef is certainly part of the Haredi camp. Rabbi Lau is chatsi evit chatsi ben chorin, half and half.
Trying but, to figure out what he is.
No, but I can go, I know who he is, but I know why he's half and half. But with Rabbi Lau, his own children did not serve in the army. They learned in Panovich. So this already tells you if he tolerated that, his own children. Now, and the chief rabbinate today started invalidating Geirut Gittin done by Rabbanim in the United States, in England, in Europe. There is a list. Who is reliable? Who is not reliable?
Israel.
Excuse me?
You forgot Israel.
I can't hear.
In your list, you forgot Israel.
No, Israel is the least of it. Rabbi Drukman was a machlekes in Geirut, but they're not going to invalidate him. Take my word for it, Rabbi.
Nobody invalidated.
Rabbi Chaim Drukman is a tzaddik yisrael olam, but a machlekes in Geirut. The Rabbi Sherman, who had been on a Luftmishner in the army, was a colonel in the army. He went very much against any gay route that was not with results of 100% plus. Okay, but that was legitimate machloket. But b'dieved, to go and invalidate Rabbi Haskell looks to me. I mean, this is, wow. This rabbi from Montreal, all right, I know they're a little bit left, but Rabbani Shalom, these are reliable Orthodox rabbanim. When Rabbi Lukstein converted the president's daughter, you know who the Avbeitin was. He brought in Reb Heschel Schechter. If you have any problems, you got to go to Reb Heschel, not to Rabbi Lukstein. He and the assistant rabbi were the other two members of the Beitin. But Reb Heschel was the one that converted. And they started questioning the rabbanim. And right now, this is in the news. My student, Rabbi Seth Farber, is yelling, screaming, shouting, how do you invalidate? And this is a very, very delicate question. To the best of my knowledge, you can have tremendous machlokot lahalacha, but no rav ever invalidated another rav. We differ, our thinking is different. Yisurei Reuven, we reached the conclusion, if you're Hungarian, you have to follow the Erev. If you're a Pelisha, you may follow the Erev. If you're a Litvisha, you can be Machia. It's a Machla. But no one's going to say that the Kehila Jaka was not a good Jew because he was Machmir. Or that the Beit Ephraim was not a good Jew because he was Mekil. Nowadays, this question has come up. Now, this question comes to the forefront in Rav Ovadia's Tshuva. Because Rav Ovadia says that yes, it's true, and it's very fascinating, his command of the situation. You all know that Chazal already said, if someone is not an expert in Kiddushin and Gittin, lo yahelo esek imohem. He shouldn't be involved in Kiddushin, Gittin. You have to know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, chas v'chalila, you're creating mamzeret. Rav Ovadia says, nowadays, we have to depend upon the Rabbanim. We can't question Rabbanim. If they're Orthodox Rabbanim, we have to go with the Chazaka that they are reliable. And if you'll say, Gittin and Kedushin is difficult, but nowadays, and Rabbi Avadia quotes sources, we have a Shulchan Aruch. Everything is written out for you. You have guidebooks for Rabbanim, how to write Gittin, names. The biggest problem that you get, I've told you more than once, and this is true in Israel, true anywhere in the world. Chikur HaShemot, Chakirat HaShemot. What's your real name? What name do you write? How many different names do we have? What's my name? Arnold Edward, Aaron Yitzchak, Ani, Aaron, I'm known by all these different names. You follow me? Someone the other day came over to me, Rabbi Rothkopf. He was my student in the 60s. I told him, I'm happy to hear the name Rothkopf. Someone remembers it. But it's an interesting question. Hamukhuneh, the Mitkaryeh. Think, many of us have so many different names. My parents named me Arnold Edward. I don't know why Arnold Edward. Aaron Yitzchak, all right? That was the nohag in America. Today it's a little bit easier. From people give their kids a Hebrew name. But even if you give a kid a Hebrew name, Aharon. Aaron is Aaron. Aaron, Aaron. Which is it? Arnie, short. Okay. So, Rabbanim have to know what to do. They're guidebooks. Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, if you go to his Ezrat Yisrael, you'll see the Ezras. We'll talk about this in the Monday class. He published all the names. How do you write them? Rav Binyamin Bach from Baltimore, who was a Talmud of the Rav when he arrived in America, the Kollel in Boston that lasted just a few years, he wrote a whole volume. His son was Pini Bach, who died. That was the tragedy for Rabbi Riskin. It changed Rabbi Riskin's life to a great degree. He died dancing with his students on Chalamoid. He was in his 30s. He was a young man. Purim, what I say? Cholamoid on Purim, I mean. Purim became Cholamoid. That's Neir of Hapashiyat. He died dancing with his students, had a heart attack, And any kid in that room, many of them struggled for years afterwards. Some struggle until today. Lo Aleinu, one of them is a Russian Marusha, and part of it was the trauma, the shock of the Rebbe dying before your eyes. He also wrote a guidebook. Then there's Kavanaki. There's a whole guidebook, what you do, how you give it, get, look into the Aruch HaShulchan. So Rav Avadya says, any Rav that gets involved with Gittin and Kedushim has to know what he is doing. And I have to tell you, I'm working on filling out a ketuvah, first time in my life that I recall, I'm marrying a garush to a grusha. And this is not a ketuvah diyir katar. Kharbi, remember I did many ketuvah for people who lost them. That's a different ketuvah. But this is a garush to a grusha. So you have to know what you're doing. It's not a betulaka, it's a matuftata. You have to know how much money is involved. You can't make a mistake. You take the RCA guide. It tells you which day of the week, how you write the day, how you write the month, how you write the year. For the city, Port Washington, I can spell it in modern Hebrew, I can spell it in Yiddish. Now, b'dievet, it doesn't matter what it is. Take my word for it. It's not a get. But I don't like to be a wise guy. I'm coming in a stranger. So Yomo contacted the RCA based in for me, and he got me an answer for Port Washington, spelled out in the Yiddish fashion. And that's what you say.
I contacted Lady Mostovsky.
And Lady Mostovsky contacts Rabbi Reese. Lady Mostovsky is not, that's the RCA based on. What do you want out of me? What is Rabbi Reese doing in Chicago, my friend?
CRC.
He's the Unterführer for Rabbi Gedalia Schwartz. You follow me? So I'm not off if I say the RC based, and I'm not off at all. I'm right on.
What
does the lady he helps. He's an administrator there too. Chicago has the second most viable, lively Torah community in the United States. Chicago, Los Angeles, unbelievable. So today you have so much guidance. So Rav Avadya says, look, we don't know the name of the Rav in Romania, but there were Rabbanim there, and he knew Rabbi Rosen. Yeah, he knew him. Rav Avadya knew him. We all knew him. I knew him too. I met him at the RCA convention. And he was a responsible, reliable personality. And if they were getting, if something was going on, Rav Avadya said chazaka on the Rav that he knew what he was doing. In addition, Rav Avadya elaborates on the point that we discussed last week. You see, when the woman says she got it in the mail, she may very well be confused. We're only human beings. None of us have perfect memories. All right, I remember certain things. I remember other things. My wife remembers a lot better than I do. None of us have perfect, perfect memories. It depends what's important to you, what you're geared for. I mean, the Rav was overwhelmed by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He never saw anyone with such a memory that the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I mean, I saw this with my own eyes. I can never forget it. There was a Rav in Philadelphia, Rabbi Reuben, Rabbi Yalas, Rabbi Ephraim HaKoyen Yalas. He was the father-in-law of Professor Meir Simcha Feldblum, who we also knew, Yeshiva afterwards, Bar Ilan. So Rav Yalas was in Philadelphia. It was a golden idea. He had a photographic memory.
He's also very approachable.
And approachable. And I was friendly with him my year there. But lost, totally lost in Philadelphia those years, all conservative, all reform, who needed Goyim. But when he came to Lubavitch, to the Fabrenians, and he sat up front, it was like a moment of fulfillment. So here's the Rebbe. I saw this with my own eyes and heard it with my own ears. Here's the Rebbe. The Rebbe held no svarim in front of him. Everything he quoted was by heart. So here's the Rebbe quoting Tosfot line by line. And there's Rav Yalas in an undertone, one line ahead of the Rebbe, quoting line by heart. You understand? So, all right, this is fabulous. The Rav didn't have that type of memory, believe me. Yitzhak and I can testify when the Rav needed a source, he knew a Gemara, he quoted the Gemaras by heart, but he didn't, you know, it was in the Masechet Baba Kama. Aaron Lichtenstein sat against the wall there, right next to the window. Aaron, Avu Shteit, Avu, And Aaron Lichtenstein, in all the years I sat before the Rav, once he was off by one daf. It was in Pesachim. I think Rabbi said it was Kuf Aleph Amid Bet, and what the Rav was quoting was on Kuf Bet Amid Aleph. That was the only time Rabbi Lichtenstein was off. But you see, the woman is a simple woman. And Rav Ovadia agrees that what she's probably talking about, I'm using the modern Hebrew version they use in Israel, she got the Tudat Gerushin in the mail. But this is very, very fascinating, because believe it or not, this is the same problem we have today. And I would throw into the public controversy today, look at Rav Ovadia's tshuva. We don't question Rabbanim. A Rav, Orthodox Rav, Smicha, we know of an Orthodox shul, there's a Mechitza, Ketatva, Kedin, look at Rav Kila Jeshurun, it's not just the Mechitza, but you got to walk up, the women I think in the new shul have to walk up 3 flights to get to the balcony. They have to have a Shabbos elevator. Well, you say terrible.
I know the story.
You know the story. The story, he wanted to bring the women down. And Max Setra said, I can't daven here anymore. My mother will not allow it. But how do you question? And if you start to question other Rabbanim, then all of Yiddishkeit falls apart. We're only human beings. This is a basic clown in Yiddishkeit. Lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharei. The Kohen Gadol and the Kohanim didn't take off their clothes the minute they finished the avodah in public. The Gemara already raises this question. How come they didn't strip naked? They're not allowed to wear the big day kohuna. Lav le not nitnu. It's the avodah is finished. But lo nitna Torah l'malachei hasharei. They have to go back to the lockers. And in the lockers, they change their clothes. Now, the other concept, that to quote the Maharsham, so see here Rav Ovadia is revolutionary, and he says, yes, it's true that the Maharsham, Rav Shvadron, said it's lahalacha v'lo lama'aseh, but where you have other factors and to save mamzeret, I absolutely agree that it has to be lahalacha and lema'aseh. And Rav Ovadia time and time repeats this concept. Then. Very, very important. Again, you can't do it all the time, though. Why can't you? If the first husband is not alive, you follow, you're not going to be able to get him to give the get if you don't know where the first husband is. But where you can get the first husband and you can convince him, it's no reason he shouldn't agree unless he's an evil person, then you can do Bitul Haget and you have the Masham. If you do Bitul Haget, the first marriage is not Chal. So the children, whenever the second marriage was, she didn't need a get in between. The first marriage was never Chal. And if the first marriage was never Chal, the children from the second marriage are not mamzerim. That's Bitul Haget. Go into Rakefet Aaron, Chelek Gimel. It's all there with all the sources. And then he says, this is critical, and I'm happy to say, my colleague Rav Shlomo Gorin also agrees. So you see, here in Israel, people will tell you, Rav Ovadia, Rav Gorin, we're always fighting. And this is the tragedy. This is what frightened the Rav. In 1959-60, Rav Herzog died in 59. The Rav was offered the chief rabbinate of Israel on a silver platter. It would have been unanimous. I remember this like yesterday. Rav Reuven Katz absolutely was the leading Rav in Israel, the Rav of Petach Tikva, the father of Rav Michal Katz, who you may have had as a Rebbe in YU, and Rav Reuven Katz fought for the Rav. That's it. He will be the chief rabbi. And Ben-Gurion went to meet the Rav. All right, there was opposition, the Haredim. I told you this story. I got an email My wife saw the email on my desk. I brought it home. I was writing. Sometimes I answer here. I answer. I write it home. Then I bring it the next day for Sherry. So I get an email. Did Rebbetzin Tanya Soloveitchik ride a horse? Could you? And my wife was hysterical. What was the? I told her no. It's a serious email. Why? Because in Yediot they ran an article that they went to visit Boston and find out who the Rebbe was and who his wife was, and they go mix swimming and onset, and the Rebbetzin rides a horse. And they wanted, you know, these people were tumbling, Haredim already, 1960, but the Rebbe totally backed out. Why did the Rebbe back out? That's the story he told us in class. He spoke to us. It was a big decision. It wasn't a simple matter. Chief Rabbi of Israel. And one of the reasons he backed out, he said, the politics. If the chief rabbi was purely rabbinical, he would consider it. But the politics involved. And here, that politics got only worse and worse and worse. And you see Rav Gorin and Rav Ovadia, there could have been a beautiful era of Hinei Matov Manoyim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. Rav Gorin was also an Ilu Yisha Kup. He wasn't Rav Ovadia, but he had a fabulous head, and he also knew how to learn. But Ribbono Shel Olam, the politics that intervened, the newspapers, Israel, to sell newspapers. You'll see Drukman, the rabbi today, it's in the headlines, it's on the news, it'll cause gossip, slander. The newspapers have to sell. But Rav Ovadia here says, we can absolutely rely upon the Masham. I agree with Avraham Shapiro. Rav Gorin also agrees. The one who didn't agree, by the way, and Rav Ovadia mentions that, and this played a big role in why they had to have such support to do it, was Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and I quoted it in great detail. I quoted it in great detail in Chelek Gimel. I quoted it in class. He was very hesitant, and he felt that when the Masham wrote Lahalacha v'lola ma'aseh, he really meant it, Lahalacha, in theory, but not to put into practice. But these other Rabbanim, particularly if you have another sniff that there was a Rav and she got it and she's confused with the mail, you certainly can use it Lahalacha u'lama'aseh. Okay, let me go one step further. Siman Chet. One step further. And this is to the Av Beitim of Haifa. Let me give you the name, Reb Yitzchak Chazan. Could be I taught his daughter Michala. One time in the 70s, an Israeli girl gave me a get from the Beit, I think it was from Haifa, the get was ripped. And she told her father, don't put it into the file, I want to give it to my Rebbe in Michala. It was worthless, the get is ripped already. As long as she has the Tudat Gerushin, she's taken care of. So, and here again, we don't know the details. Rav Ovadia writes to him, this is 1978, yeah, that works out well, that his daughter was my student, Siman Chet. Behemshech l'sichati im kavol tifato. He says, in continuing our conversation, I want to tell you that I absolutely am in favor of doing Bitul Haget. And here Rav Ovadia gives the Eitzah, he should be mevatel the get first in front of one aid, then in front of a second aid, each one separately. One should not know from the other one. It absolutely circumstances where you can apply the Gemara of Afkinan Rabbanin Kedushin Minei. But here, what Rav Chazan was worried about, evidently, and I'm reading between the lines, because I see what Rav Ovadia answers him, that this is a respectable couple. Bitul Haget means, here, a couple got married, let's bring it to life, a couple got married in the year 2000. The marriage fell apart in the year 2015. 15 years this respectable couple had relations. Hundreds of times. And now you want to say that these relations were znut, harlotry? not a happy feeling. Something went wrong. People get divorced. Today, divorce is widespread. Lo aleinu. But it doesn't mean these are bad people or sinful people. All right, today we're living with feminist problems, self-expression, so much going on. I heard women already on Purim indicating that Esther is not the heroine of the Megillah, but Vashti is. Vashti, Yitz Greenberg said this in 1980 with Esther, condemned Esther. What was she? Just think of their point of view. She saved the Jewish people, but they look at it. Oh, prostitution. Vashti refused to appear naked. She's the hero. These are real problems. Real problems. You're living with the Western world. I'm going to talk about this in student college.
That's why in the Apocrypha there's a book of Judith, back to the account of Esther.
Okay. So you see what I'm saying? These are real problems, but it doesn't mean that their whole sexual attitude is nefarious. So Rav Ovadia says to Rav Chazan, "Ein lachush she'osek bilatot bilatznut, kiven shehu ba'al beheter, v'lo haya lo lachush pen tizdamein siba lebitul kedusha." Very, very fascinating. They lived together 15 years. These 15 years, Herbie, they were husband and wife. Nothing sinful. Nothing that was not black and white, straight and forward. No one is going to think in a normal relationship the day will come when the Chachamim are retroactively annulling my marriage and declaring my biyot biyotznut. And Rav Ovadia is right. That should not be a factor. You understand, evidently, Rav Chazan said, how can we go and parcel out a wedding of a dignified couple, of a Rosh Yeshiva? Rav Shmuel Rezovsky was married to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank's daughter. They got divorced. When they told the Chazon Ish, it's fabulous, because the Chazon Ish had a very difficult marriage, those of you who know the inner workings, but he never dreamt of divorce. That was unheard of. And when Rav Shmuel Rezovsky got divorced, the B'nai Brak, Chazon Ish, Talmud, Gaonim. So the Chazon Ish said, I'm paraphrasing, Oy vey, I feel the Rashi Yeshiva getting sichopayit. Even Rashi Yeshiva got divorced. Remember I told you the story. He remarried, Rav Shmuel Rezovsky remarried Bezivik Sheni, the aunt of a Talmud of mine. And she, it was a beautiful second marriage. She couldn't have children. That's why her first husband divorced her. And those were the happiest years of Rav Shmuel's life. You understand? I don't have to go further. They're Gemaras with wives, good, bad. I don't have to elaborate. I trust you know. So his first wife remarried him when he was dying of cancer to take care of him in his last months. So you have to give credit to the lady that he divorced and whatever. There must have been stories there, personalities. But the biyot would not be absnut. Who would ever dream that one day there'll be hafkat kedushin? And in Simchet, once again, Rav Ovadia stands strong and firm that you can use the masham lahalacha ulama'aseh. Okay, now we come to the bombshell. Simen Tet. This is a bombshell, and it's going to be widely quoted here. Let the safest right off the press. You follow me, Aryeh? I'm quoting it now. Let's wait and see what happens. Because, you know, you look at a sefer, a rabbinic sefer, you have to, you know, a Talmud Chacham, you have a feel, there's material which is run of the mill. And then there's material which is a bombshell. Right. Before I tell you the case, I'll dramatize the bombshell very easily. We alluded to it about an hour ago. No, my dear students, a person walks into class, a long beard. Yomo would like the Rebbe to have a beard. He's been pressing me, and I have a Talmud, Moshe Wiener, who's been pressing me, and I find he's written the books against shaving, Moshe Wiener. So I finally wrote an answer to him. I left it on Sherry's desk. I was debating Sherry. He was my Talmud in the 60s, all right? He's entitled to his opinion. But I finally wrote an answer to him. I wrote to him. I grew up in a different era. I brought in the Norokal shaver to the Rav. We took it apart when the Norokal came out. It was the first time this way instead of this way. Remington Schick. We took it apart on Rebbe's desk. And Rebbe, I see it before my eyes. He said, I don't see a difference. It's the same principle. It's a scissors. You can't use one without the other. So I'm from a different generation. Number two, I wrote to him, tell me, which is more important, the Mossad or Tzahal? You need both. I'm a member of the Mossad. Tzahal wears the uniform. The Mossad, we're different. We're lost in the crowd. We know what we have to do. Who's more important? There's no answer. We need both. I'm a member of the Mossad. Some students need that role model. They don't fit into Tzahal. All right, the Mossad. And then the third point I made to him, the most important, Jacob, I reminded him of Mesorat Moshe. Did they ever teach you in Yeshiva and Bernard Rebel graduates what Mesorat Moshe is all about? It's the sefer that came out of Reb Moshe Feinstein's conversations with his grandson Mordechai Templer. It's only about 750 pages. My dear student Steve Gross got me a copy. You can't get a copy today for love or money. And I went through line by line.
Is it reliable?
Reb Moshe David Tendler, Reb Reuben Feinstein, and Reb David Feinstein in their own handwritings all declare it reliable. So what can I do? I mean, there are rumors here, rumors there, but they all declare it reliable, okay? And there, when my Talmud, Reb Moshe Wiener, came out with the first time around on Hadrat Panim and not the shave, he went to Reb Moshe Basker. Reb Moshe got hysterical. Would not give us kama. Your motzi shemra, motzi laz, on Slabatka, on Mir, on Chevron, on Telj, on Panovich. What Litvish Bacha had a beard? Everyone shaved. You can quote me. When I learned in Lakewood, I'm an honest man. True. I came up the steps, Hanukkah night. Two fellas were on the steps keeping chicky. No, you know what keeping chicky means, Yomo? Go back to the 1950s and ask someone. Don't waste my time now. Keeping chicky? I said, what are you keeping chicky for? They said the Rosh Yeshivas will come up. He lived on sleeps on the second floor. So I said, so what's going on there? You don't want the Rosh Yeshiva? Two of the fellas are shaving with an electric shaver. The Rosh Yeshiva asses. There's Samachan Reb Moshe. So you don't want to offend the Rosh Yeshiva. Now I understood. I never understood what would happen if the Rosh Yeshiva came along suddenly and the guy has only shaved half his face. Okay? And by the way, that happened in YU, in Rabok Shir, Erev Purim, Rabbi Wahlberg, what was his name? Jerry Wahlberg, came into Shir, half his face shaved, half not, sat in front of, right next to me, in front of the Rebbe, part of the time with the shaving face, part of the time with the half that was not shaved, and waited for the Rebbe to make a comment. I don't think Ravok made a comment, I don't think he ever noticed it, but the class had a good laugh. My dear students, someone comes into this room with a long beard and payas, and a Bekisha and I saw him daven shachris and had geshuckled and good daven mit kavana and gehet for mem baruch brich shmei and gehet for mechem ach amens and what kavana and kedusha and kadosh kadosh, he was flying in the air. And do you know that Rav Ovadia Pashut him out for Eidus, maledicted him? Do you know why, Vic? Because he was a lawyer and appeared in the Beit Mishpat, not just in the Beitin. Shekol Homa, Rav Ovadia goes crazy. Listen to these words. Shekol Homer Shemuta Lehita Yang Bar Kaot Mishum Dina the Malka Dina Hu Toema Od the Gaslan Hu the Rasha Mik Rei Hu Pasuli Eidot. Oh my gosh. What Rav Ovadia says here, we'll see more. Let me watch the clock. Rav Ovadia here. What was the story? The story is very simple. We don't have the whole case, but I think it's very simple. A woman was married twice. There was no get in between. Let me give the story who this trip is to. It's to the rabbinate in Yerushalayim. It's about a woman who was married with chuppah b'kedushin in the Misrat HaRabbanut b'Yerushalayim. Now, let me just explain this. When you get married, everyone thinks marriage, you have to have a hall, you have to have music, you have to have flowers, you have to have photographers. You can get married in the Misrat HaDatot for a few shekel. They serve drinks and cake. The total good wedding. People who don't have relatives, people who are older in age, that don't need the big taharam, if I can use that word. Fine. So this woman got married, and...
In order to do that, the Moed Sadat, you have to bring, if you're not, first of all, you have to bring proof that you're a bach, or she's a bach.
Yeah, no,
you
yes.
You have to bring proof that there was a get.
Right. No.
So that means that they did it in the Rabbanut, they checked
the
Shiach.
Yeah, so right, here's what happened. So they got married in the Rabbanut, and the marriage did not last long. They separated. There was no get, only a few years later. And while she was separated from him, she lived with another man, and she had a son. And this son now wants to get married. Is he a mamzer or isn't he a mamzer?
There is a
mamzer. Herbie, you jumped too quickly. Relax.
There was no gap between the first one.
Let Rav Ovadia handle it. I'll be samach on Rav Ovadia.
On what basis?
It's very simple. I'll tell
you.
Baruch atah Adonai
Melech
Olam Shekhoni Abedbarau.
What
are
you saying,
Yitzchak? Is he Mamza or not? So Rav Ovadia said, who were the Eidim to her original marriage? It turned out that one of the Eidim was this lawyer. He could have had a long beard and payas and a bekisha and a shtreimel. And Rav Ovadia says, a lawyer who always appears in the Beit Mishpat, this man absolutely cannot be a dayan.
Even
he's a shomer Shabbos and makpid and glat, and he learns daf yomi. He is pasuli eidot. Eila hamishpatim asher tasim lifneihem, lifneihem lifno livlo lifnei ha'akum. And the Gemara says clearly. Rashi quotes it. The Mechilta. Everyone is very clear that even if our laws are the same laws like the secular court, nevertheless, if you go to the secular court, you are spitting in the face of Torah.
And he applies this to the Israeli courts.
Yitzchak, Savlanut. And here Rav Ovadia goes in Yonah the Yoma. My dear students, I have a colleague who I grew up with. He is world famous. his name is Steve Riskin, Shlomo Riskin, Rabbi Riskin, whatever name you wish. Lately, Rabbi Riskin has moved very much towards the camp of Chobevei Torah. And he has a school for Dayanim, Dayanot, I should say. Not just women rabbis, women Dayanot. All right. He wrote an entire treatise, which I gave out in class. I think I had two copies. Ultimately, I gave them both out. I read it, justifying his position. And part of it is very simple. Kiblu olai. What's wrong if I have a face, Michael Miller and I are fighting over $100. And we say, this lady is a genius and we think she's very fair. We're going to go to Sherry. Sherry will be the Boreret, the Dayanit, call her what you want, and whatever she says goes. What's wrong? Kiblu, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Amayaretz, we agree in advance. So Rav Ovadia raises the issue, just what Yitzchak is trying to say. Yitzchak, you better be very careful not to say your Svavah to Rav Ovadia, or he'll eat you up like a lion devours a little lamb. And these judges, Rav Ovadia says, people think the judges are Jewish. They're decent people. They're upright people. Dinah de Malchuta Dinah, we say it by Goyim, Menachat Kama Vakama in a Jewish state, and we've all agreed to this. Kiblu Aleihem. We're all part of the state. We vote. We have a parliament. The parliament represents us. You understand? There's so much written on this. It goes back to Rav Kook wrote on this very concept in Das Kayin, later published, printed. Very interesting. And what's wrong? Why are we so upset? And Rav Ovadia says this is even worse because the Jews sitting in the Beit Mishpat rule according to non-Jewish civil law. It's not that they know Shas and Paiskim. It's not that they're trying to reach a Torah decision. They're reaching a decision shall call dinehem al pi mishpatei hagoyim. And more than that, he says, we all know the newspapers, the radio, time and again, they're quoting the fine judges that sit in the Beit Mishpat, Le'irurim, the Beit Mishpat Elyon, and many of them are Rishoyim Gemurim, Umeirim Yad B'Toret Moshe, Ukeilu Chireif V'Gideif. And you have the Supreme Court judges who literally blasphemous. Blasphemy against Torah Hashem. And you're going to go in the secular court? This absolutely invalidates, voids a Jew like this from being a witness. Now, you should know, this is a very, hold on. Rav Ovadia is saying it very extreme. His son just said it 2 weeks ago, if you recall, on Saturday night. The son said the same thing against the Supreme Court, against the going into the secular courts. The problem is real. I don't want to dismiss it and just say, Rav Ovadia, all right, he's extreme, he's Haredi. It's a real problem. How do you have judges who will choose British law, Roman law, over Torah law? How do you have judges who will choose secular concepts because they have no knowledge of Torah? It's a very delicate issue. This issue, Yitzchak, hold on 1 minute. This Yitzchak issue has haunted us for over 100 years. What has happened in Israel is they have tried to introduce the concept. Nu Yitzchak, give me the word. Mishpat Ivri. Mishpatavri. This already is before Menachem Elon, but Menachem Elon became the most famous person. His three volumes on Mishpatavri are classic, are phenomenal. And what does Mishpatavri mean? That you use Jewish sources, Torah sources, in addition to the secular law, general law. What does it mean, Mishpatavri? If that's the case, why not use the word halacha? Jacob knew, let me hear what they taught you in Bernard Rebel Graduate School. What is the difference between Mishpatavri and halacha? Very interesting. Halacha, you reach a decision, it's entirely based on the halacha. And that decision that you reach obligates you. Mishpatavri, it's not like halacha. You're going to cite Jewish sources, and if those sources and the civil sources you can fit into one pattern, that will be your decision. But it's not like halacha that it must be the decisive factor. And on the Supreme Court today, for the first time, you have many judges who are well-versed in halacha. You have David Mintz, you have Salzberg, there are a few others. It's a new world today. A woman is coming on who will be the first woman who covers her hair with a shetel sitting in the Supreme Court. There have been women before who were Shomrat Shabbat, but this woman, it's Rav Ariel's granddaughter. She's a graduate of Chorev. So you cannot say they're ruling on pi halacha, but they're certainly ruling, taking into consideration Mishpatavri. And when they take into consideration Mishpatavri, many times it's totally, the conclusion is in accordance with halacha. Particularly in Choshen Mishpat, where those of you who have studied Choshen Mishpat or will study Choshen Mishpat, you'll see that Choshen Mishpat is infinitely more flexible than Ebenezer, Yoredeya, or Rechayim, where you have ritual law. Ritual law, you cannot have flexibility to the same extent in Dinei Mamonot, where many times the halacha encourages you to compromise. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Zayin Amud Aleph, Vav Amud Bet.
How can you compare Choshen Mishpat to Ebenezer?
On this level, you can. They're two different concepts of thinking. And Choshen Mishpat, if you know what's involved with the Beit Din, the first thing the Beit, I sat in the Beit Din with Rav Teitz and Rav Zuba. You knew them.
Sure.
I sat in the Beit Din, and the first thing they did, I watched. I was a kid, but I was learning. Then I saw it's all in Choshen Mishpat. First thing they did, Rav Teitz says, do you want a din or do you want a pshara? If you want the letter of the law, it can leave you bitter, filled with controversy. You can walk out of here upset. But if we compromise, will not be the letter of the law, but you walk out of here friends. What do you want? Look into the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's exactly the words. Okay. So, Mishpatavri is very fascinating. It's not, you don't approach it the way you approach halacha, but you certainly have to take into account Choshen Mishpat, Dinei Yisrael, Rishonim, Achronim. It's a different ballpark. The more learned the judge, the better off we are. But Rav Avadya says, you go into a Beit Mishpat, they can all be Jews sitting there, they can all be Jews with langa, payas, and bod, beards, but you are puzzled because you are helping a non-halachic legal system. Yes, Yitzchak.
Okay, so let's say that we puzzled the aid, and now the new first one is going with. Don't we say, Apsak and Halacha, A, B, and B is Nut, and so therefore in 15 years they're married, and you can say they had the intention to be married.
I want to ask you, what is the last book you read?
What do you mean?
What book did you read last?
You mean the novel or do you mean the sefer?
Did you spend time on Rakafet Aaron Chelikimel? You will find in Rakafet Aaron Chelikimel your very question is asked. But the answer is very simple. Ein Adam of Sen Bilato Bilat Snud is when he has Kavvana to marry her through that Bia. When he lives with her 15 years, he's living with her on the basis of the original marriage ceremony. It's not those biyot afterwards, he's not being kolneha. He's living with her because
he's kvar kana. They're not considered married.
When they're machkir kedushin, that takes care of the original marriage. If we would say like you, this is the whole question. God have mercy on the Upper West Side. It hurts me to talk like this, but these are facts. Women who are not married go to mikvah. It's frightening, because it's a total, but now they're sleeping. My grandson was up there for one Shabbos. He came back, he told me stories, he was shaking. That's why they say the crowd that was more is more frum moved up to Washington Heights. The rents are cheaper and the people are frumer. That's what I'm told. Okay, we're living in a world. Who wants to get married? Why should a woman get married today? Understand that she's busy. She's smarter than any man. She has to take a man, a dummy, who doesn't have any savoir faire. It's a terrible thing. I know what I'm saying to you. Then when she turns 30, she wants to have children. Suddenly she realizes, Ein kol chai. No, all the beauties are gone already. It's a sad story. So the, God have mercy, they sleep around. Some women want to catch the man, want to get pregnant. Lo aleinu. No, she slept with this one, she slept with that one, the third one. She's no getting between. There's a real serious question. The fact that the woman goes to mikvah makes the question worse. Part of our whole cheta for civil marriage is generally because, take Russia, who went to mikvah? They didn't go to mikvah, the bia, tznut, and the whole concept, because it goes against the chazaka. Ein adam osa bilato bila tznut? No, but that's only if she goes to mikvah. Here, the frum girl, the frumi, goes to mikvah, the guy only really goes to, God have mercy, what the halachic problems are. But in the case you mentioned, there's no shaila. Because she's living with him on the basis of the original marriage. Yes, Michael.
I mean, you have to give Rabbi Lavadia tremendous, you know, it's unbelievable that he would find a way out like this. The question is, does he really believe what he did in terms of this is a way out? Because if he believes it, he would probably be able to disqualify 3/4 of the marriages in the Dati Lumi world where you can disqualify the aid. Based on a principle similar to what you're stating.
Was he ever Masada Kedushin at a wedding that had a lawyer as an aide?
3/4 of the marriages of the Dati Lumi world would be eligible for...
Right. So let me tell you something, Michael. Let me tell you something. Does he really believe it? I think he really believes it. But all these questions only come up.
He's a frum Jew.
No,
he's not being judged, being a lawyer.
You're quoting me. You have to line the button, pay us, and
so you're going to call him out a frum Jew?
That's what Rav Avadya says. He's puzzled. But did Rav Avadya? I don't know.
I
never saw it. I can't answer. But Michael.
In the secular world.
Michael, I just want to tell you something. Rabbanim have told me that they go out of their way to always have one aide who could be knocked out. Rabbanim have told me. You know why? They say there's such problems today with the breakdown of sexual standards. Remember, we grew up in a different world. What's his name? The guy on the coast... who made a career out of talking on the radio. Dennis Prager. Right, Dennis Prager. So Dennis Prager, once a Talmud of mine, Jack Levenstein, who's a chassid of Dennis Prager, once gave me a tape of a talk. And Dennis Prager, who should be frumot, he talks frumkeit, he should be a Shoma Torah mitzvah like his brother, but he's not Orthodox, Lowell Lane, writes to whatever. But he speaks very well. And he says, when I went to school in the 60s, I went to Flatbush Yeshiva High School. Had I gone to any general high school, I would have had the same moral, ethical values that I got out of Flatbush Yeshiva. I might not have had Shabbat or Kashrut, that's Jewish, but the ethical moral that one had to be a virgin until their marriage, every person in the world thought like that. Every upright citizen. Ingrid Bergman committed adultery, and remember how she couldn't get a job in Hollywood. Okay? Today we're living in a world where, God have mercy, sometimes, for instance, you're going through customs or you're going through the Bidika Bitkonit before you get on a plane, and this is your wife, so I always say, yes, we've been married 57 years. They start shaking. 58 years shortly, they look at you. Wow. Color, they want to salute you. So, we banish your life. When I grew up, who had two wives? Who had three wives? Who had affairs? Who had divorce? Who heard of it? The only person, I went to both his weddings, and I can tell the story now, Professor Louis Feldman, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, just died. It hurts. My first, read Washington. I write, I published, who reads it? Here, Yitzchak is asking questions that I discuss in Rakafet Aron. So read Washington. So he married the first time a very prominent rabbi's daughter from the Bronx, Rabbi Malatin's daughter. And these girls, she was good friends with Rabbi Teitz's daughter. And they got caught up in the big Western world. This was the start of our challenges. They became my shrum. Their husbands, the other one was married to Rosenfeld, if I remember the name correctly. He was a Talmud of mine, a classmate of mine.
Norman
Rosenfeld. Norman, he passed away. He was a classmate of mine, Rabbi Volk Shear. Hadassah, what's her name? Hadassah, if I'm not mistaken. Wow. They had to get divorced. I was at Louis Feldman's wedding. I knew Rivka Malatin inside out. Second time around, he married a Hasidic Rebbe's daughter whose father had perished. The Rebbe died in the Shoah. She was raised by her uncle, Hasidic Rebbe in Williamsburg. The first wife was a college professor. The second wife was a kindergarten teacher, Miriam. She should only have her refuah shleima. She's not well either. And that marriage lasted with Dorei Dorot. Wonderful, wonderful children. You understand what I'm saying? So this is the world. This is Rav Avadya. And this is why I don't get upset. What you're saying, let me quote Seinfeld to you. Lock it in the safe. You follow me? You don't know what's going to happen. All right, this guy was not a total Shomer Shabbos. Who knows? 10 years later, you saved kids by that knowledge. You follow?
Well, that's my point. I mean, ten years later,
I
believe it or not.
Right.
You found a way to justify it.
Right. All right, I don't want to go further. He raises another problem here that we have to discuss, but it's amazing. This volume that came out now with Mamzerit, if I find one person saying to me that the rabbis don't care about helping Mamzerim, I'm going to slap their face and send them to China to deal with Meir Tzidkun. Got the message? And here you see Rav Ovadia. Wow. And this is Rav Ovadia. But we're not finished. This shiva, you see, there's more to it. Okay, so what did we see today? It's a very interesting material. He agrees with Rav Avram Shapiro. Rav Shlomo Gurin also agrees. And they wind up doing the Havkot Tedushin, Halacha L'maisa. And that's a very important point that time and again reappears in the tshuva. And then we get involved with the Romanian case, and that Romanian case raises the issue of an attitude towards rabbis all over the world, what's going on right before our eyes with the RCA and the chief rabbinate, and that issue has not yet been solved. I have material here to give out that you will see. Then we got involved with Rav Yitzchak Chazan on the Haifa Beitin, and there too, he comes up with Hafkat Kedushin to solve a case of Mamzeret, and Rav Avadya tells him exactly how to do it. Then we get involved in Siman Tet with the Pisul, with the nullifying an aide who could be totally frum, but is also a lawyer who appears in secular court. And Rav Avadya wastes no words in putting that witness down, criticizing him, maledicting him, that with all the frumkeit in the world, if you go into secular court, you are raising your hands against Torah Moshe. Now, we spent a little time on secular courts, Kiblu Aleichem, Rabbi Riskin, his thinking. There is something to it. I also tried to explain Mishpat Divrei. And obviously the secular courts, the more religious judges that are appointed, it is better for the court, better for Mishpat Divrei, better for the entire environment. On Choshen Mishpat issues, it's very easy to say Kiblu Alai. On issues of joint custody, monetary issues involved with divorce, there too, it's a lot easier to say Kiblu Alai. But as far as the ritual, it must absolutely go through a basin, but Rav Avadya is very powerful. Okay, Yitzchak, yeah.
I don't want anyone in your audience of 800 people to get the wrong impression. So I want to understand. If the weddings, like Michael mentioned, all these people are getting married, for Gittin's purpose, we have a ground in which to puzzle.
Right.
But their marriage is a marriage.
Right, no, absolutely.
Except the marriage is not a marriage.
No, the marriage is a marriage, and as long as there are no problems, this is only a b'dieved. When we need view it like an oxygen tank when we have an emergency,
right,
so we can bring it in. Okay, now, first of all, I want to mention, please pray for me, I should have strength. I have a very big speaking schedule beginning this Thursday at Yeshiva College and going all the way through for 10 days. Every day I'll be speaking in a different area, different place, Stern College, Yeshiva University, Jewish Center, a number of shuls in Teaneck, near the bridge as well, Fort Lee, maybe elsewhere as well. I hope, I pray that the Rebbe Hashem should give me strength and I should bring covered to my Rebbe's memory. All the shirim are different. Obviously, the ones given during the week will be recorded. I'm sorry about the ones on Shabbos, but I'm not yet ready to do what Satmar did when they came here and hired Russian Goyim to video the Rebbe in Meiron on Shabbos. I'm still shaking how you come up with concepts like that, but what Satmar can do, Aaron Rakefet can't. We meet again. The Sunday class after Pesach is canceled. There's no class here in the Kol. Obviously, Monday there is class. Am I right or wrong? That's what I was told. Monday there is class, so we pick up again the Monday after Pesach.
Is there a class tomorrow?
Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, there's a class. I wouldn't miss it for anything. I'm dealing with World War I and other developments in World War I. Ezra's Torah, Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. It's a name that we stand in awe of. And Be'ezrat Hashem, that's tomorrow, and we'll continue the Monday after. Now, this is for Yitzchak. This is very interesting.
Yes.
This is a center at Bar Ilan. It's called the Ruth and Rabbi Emanuel Rachman Center. And this gives out information on Bat Dei Dinim and how they're helping women. It's got a...
good luck.
It has an agenda. It's not exactly right wing.
I met your brother at Arnie Shabbaton.
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. He, you know how many children he has? How many grandchildren, great-grandchildren? Can I
more than you?
Much more. Between the two of us, we can fill the auditorium here.
Beautiful.
Thank God. This is the Rav dealing with In 1969, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik began a lecture on Purim and asked the audience to ponder the basic discrepancy between Purim and Hanukkah. And these are a few words by Judah Harris, who was in the audience. A nice fellow, very capable. This is from Michael Miller. He went out. So you have to give him this. This is Jack Hamilton. Naming anything to you? He hurled the ball at Tony Canigliaro, if I'm pronouncing it right.
He ended his career.
Ended his career, and he was haunted all his life that he almost killed this person. This happened before. Herb Skor of the Indians, Gil McDougall, Gil McDougall, and almost killed him. And Herb Skor was so upset, he could never became a great pitcher again, if I have it right. And then there was Carl Mays, who actually killed Ben Chapman with a pitch. And they said, that was 1920, they say Carl Mays was such a forbidding guy, it didn't even bother him. This is Russell Wilson, the New York Times. I got to give the New York Times, outside of their hatred for Judaism in Israel, they're okay. Russell Wilson, this is this great football player who's now doing sprint training with the Yankees. And he sizes up the big Yankees like Stanton and Judge, how they were doing football. But you understand, baseball is dangerous, but only percentage-wise very little. Football, every last player who's knocked around winds up with his head not put on properly later in life. It's like boxing. Major League Baseball, to speed up the games, now limits the times you can visit the pitcher on the mound to give them advice. And here's what's of interest to you, the two issues going on right now with Rabbi of World's Biggest Orthodox Community accuses Chief Rabbinate of Chilul Hashem. That's Adam Shire, Leonard Cohen's rabbi, Montreal Orthodox Shul, and they don't accept his conversions. And here's an article of Rabbi Seth Farber. They're meeting at the Knesset, trying to straighten out the rabbinate, which they will never do, unfortunately. This problem will intensify as I see it, but we got to keep going. Nathan Witkin, I can't get over the information, and Mark Wiener on Lou Gehrig, and finally Simon Shimon Wanderer on Reb Menashe Klein. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Take and enjoy.